As Biff from Saxon, and I'm in Fredrik's apartment here in Stockholm.
Welcome, Biff.
Yeah, it's good to be here in your abode.
Yes, finally. The new Saxon album is called Hellfire and Damnation. It's your 24th record. How did you pick that title? It sounds kind of biblical.
Yeah, it's got religious overtones, definitely. My father used to use it to tell me off for being bad. He used to say, "Hellfire and damnation, what have you been doing now?" So another one was bloody hellfire, you know. So it was a form of sort of cursing, but not so bad.
Elegant cursing.
It is. I think I'm from the English countryside, so it's quite a religious upbringing, church every Sunday and things. So I think it has a lot of religious overtones, you know, that sort of hellfire, damnation, what are you doing? You know, it's all to do with Satan will get you if you're bad type thing, that sort of background to it, you know.
And you sing about the eternal fight between good and evil.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I think it's, you know, difficult to see the difference between the two. If you look at the world today,
it is difficult. But I think if you look at how it's portrayed in the Bible or other religious texts as well, I mean, there's always good and evil in everything. But it's an eternal fight between good and evil. And I think I thought I'd like to do a song about that rather than. A lot of bands do everything about the devil and Satan and the demons and, you know, the pentagram and, your soul being taken to hell. And, there isn't, if hell exists and heaven exists, it's the two things together. So there can't be one without the other if you believe it. So my words are just about that, the eternal fight between good and evil. And it goes on all the time.
What about your own religious beliefs? Do you have any?
I'm quite spiritual, but I wouldn't say I just follow any religion. You know, I was brought up a cross between a Church of England, which is Protestant, and Methodists. But I used to go to Catholic churches as well, because my mother was a pianist and she played the organ in the chapel. So I used to go to quite a few churches and things. So I had a very mixed religious upbringing.
What kind of things would make your father scream hellfire and damnation? What upset him?
Well, you know, if I got fired from my job, which I used to get fired all the time, and, generally messing about, you know, like destroying things, you know, not cleaning the toilet properly and leaving a mess in the kitchen or carving, you know, rolling stones in the kitchen table. Something like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You did that?
Yeah. So, you know, he'd get pretty mad with me all the time.
What did he work with, your father?
My father was, originally my father was a coal miner. And then I think he had a bad accident before I was born. And then he was a textile, worked in the textile mills.
You wrote this song called Iron Wheels about how your father worked in the coal mines of Yorkshire. You're saying that he used to dig for coal, but now he lies a twisted man, one foot in the grave.
Yeah.
What was your relationship like? Were you close?
Hot and cold, really. You know, with my father, it was nice 1 minute and then not the next. Good and evil, probably. It was a drinking man.
Oh.
When I was a boy, so you could see the best in him and the worst in him. At the same time, my mother died when I was like 13, I think, or 12, 13. So I had to look after my father quite a bit when he was in his drinking state. So it was a nice relationship, but I wouldn't say it was like ultra close, you know, after my mum died.
How did that affect your own drinking? Did you like stay off alcohol and drugs?
I did stay off alcohol for a long time.
Yeah.
I didn't drink through the 80s, through the 70s and 80s, occasionally I would get drunk with the boys, you know, once in every blue moon. But I wasn't a serious drinker, no.
Even though you went on tour with Motorhead, I know that Lemmy once referred to you as tea drinker.
Well, no, I couldn't be. It could never get me to like. It could never get me to go the whole 100%. You know, drinking Jack Daniels and snorting, you know, whatever, or taking amphetamines. He was a big. It was a hell raising boy, Lemmy, and he tried to convert everybody to his. But eventually, he found. If you know, he was happy with who I was, and he was good with it. You know, he didn't force anything on me, so it was good. We had a great relationship, me and Lemmy. But in those early days, 1979, he was trying to get us to drink and, you know, smoke and, you know, snort cocaine. He was like, he was crazy. Everybody was a Beatles fan when they first came out. I saw them on some Yorkshire TV programme first, which was the first time they played a TV show. But Paperback Writer, for me, it's great, actually. The lyrics are great. And, you know, I was interested in lyrics from an early age. You know, what were they meaning? What were they writing about? And the Beatles lyrics were fantastic, most of them, actually. So Paperback Writer just appealed to me. It's a great song that's put together well.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
That's a song from Revolver, right?
Yeah.
What are they singing about? Like the Paperback Writer? Who?
Well, I think it's a song about an author, isn't it? It's about an author they knew, so I've been told. But yeah, it's a song about another person, isn't it? It's a song about somebody who wants to be, you know, he writes stories at home. He's got no success. He wants to be. He wants to write books. He wants to be published. You know. This is what it's all about. It's about a guy that wants to become a writer. And it's a very working class song, actually, I think.
And you're very much of a writer yourself when you write lyrics.
Yeah.
Were you good in school or did you perform well?
Yeah, I was pretty good at essay, which is obviously the same thing. I wasn't very good at maths, but I was okay at maths later. Music history and sort of essay were my strong points at school.
But then you left school at 15 to work as a carpenter.
I did.
And then at 18, you went to work in a coal mine.
I did.
But what happened?
Well, there wasn't enough money, the carpenter. I like working with wood, and I still like working with wood. But it just didn't give me enough money to be able to buy a guitar and... you know, do what I wanted to do, which was to write music and play in a band. So the coal mining job was well paid. So I took a job in the coal mine. I wasn't actually, I trained down the coal mine a mile underground, but I was too tall. I was too tall for the job. So they gave me another job on the coal mine, which was working the steam engines.
So how short do you have to be to work in a mine?
Well, that particular mine, you had to be quite short. I think about 5 foot was the limit. 5'4", 5'5".
So if you had been shorter, maybe you would have had a totally different kind of career.
Yeah, you're right. If I'd have been down the coal mine, I'd have probably still been there.
Your name is Peter Rodney Byford. How did you get the nickname Biff?
My brother was called Biff.
Oh.
I think it's because, you know, the BYF shortens to Biff or Bife. But Biff, he was called Biff, and I was called Little Biff at school. So I used to get some... When my brother left, he was older than me. When my brother left, I got all his enemies. I sort of inherited his enemies. So... It was a bit crazy.
Were you a tall guy back then as well, or did you, you know, reach your full
height? My brother was 6'7". He was quite really tall. I seemed small compared to him. But yeah, I was tall. I was a tall teenager, yeah.
You also became a father at 16.
Yeah.
That sounds, you know, very unusual now, but maybe it happened more often back then.
Well, it was crazy back then, you know, the sort of... to follow in the footsteps and marry early was the way to go, you know.
That was did you marry as well?
Not at 16, no, a little bit later. But, yeah, I mean, that was the way to go. You know, you met a girl, you got married, had children, and then the cycle went round. But I always had this thing with music getting in the way of the happy life.
And the girl that you had a child with, were you in love with her? Or was it more of a...
I think I probably was, yeah. I think I probably was, but you know, I've been in love with lots of people.
How old is your son now?
From that marriage?
Yeah.
It would be 40-something, I think. Quite old. My daughter from that marriage is the oldest. I think she's probably knocking on 50-something.
Oh.
So quite old.
So you stayed together for some time?
Yeah, I do meet them occasionally, yeah.
Soon be seeing though. Hey little girl, keep your head top of me. I'm a rocker. I'm a rocker. I'm a roller too, baby.
This song, I was thinking of a song to do with Thin Lizzy's song, and you know, I didn't want to do the obvious, you know, Boys Are Back in Town or Jailbreak. I wanted to do something that I heard when I was younger. So the rocker for me, because I was a rocker, I had a motorcycle, I had the leather jacket, I had the white scarf, I had the, you know, I was a rocker, I wasn't a mod in my youth.
Did you go see Thin Lizzy live as well?
I saw Thin Lizzy live, yeah. I saw them do this song with Eric Bell, the original guitarist. It's a fantastic song. And there's only Phil Lynott can write lyrics like that. You know, it's great.
Saxon was called Son of a Bitch in the early days. Was it difficult to get bookings with a name like that?
No, it was easier because it was in the punk period, in the middle to late 70s.
Oh.
So that sort of name got us work. We actually played with The Clash back then. I think they thought we were a punk band, but we weren't. We were more of a hippie, metal, rock, punky thing. But we used to get shows, you know, a lot of good shows because of the name. But I think when we got serious writing songs, I think the record company that were interested didn't like the name.
Did you get along with the Clash?
Yeah, we did. In fact, we played with the Clash a few festivals over the years, and they you know, they're always jamming 747 and Wheels of Steel in the dressing room with us. So yeah, they were big fans of that 80s metal thing.
What about the name Saxon? Where did that come from?
Well, we were asked, can you change your name? Because the American company don't like Son of a Bitch. It's not very nice, you know. So we said, yeah, we'll think of another name, because we wanted the recording contract. You know, we didn't want to lose that. So the boss of the company, the UK boss of the company, said, what about Anglo-Saxons? We were like, oh, I don't know about Anglo-Saxons. But Saxon's not bad. So that's how it came about.
Yeah, that's good. And it kind of ties in with the new wave of British heavy metal, because you wanted something British, right?
Yeah.
Like Judas Priest recorded British Steel.
Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah.
In the late 90s, I think you worked for a couple of years as a salesman for a company that sold kitchen furniture. Is that true? Or is I read it somewhere.
That sold what furniture?
Kitchen furniture.
No, I did sell antiques for a while.
Oh.
In the 90s. I collect antiques and things. I like
antiques.
Well,
that sounds logical because you're a bit of a history buff, right?
Yeah, exactly. So we did have a store where, you know, me and my wife used to buy things and then sell them in the store. So it's quite good fun, actually, collecting things.
Do you have a lot of antiques at home still?
I do, yeah. I do have a lot of antiques, too many.
So what era is your favourite?
I like Georgian, but I do like medieval furniture, but there's not a lot around. You know, there's not a lot of medieval stuff left. You know, the odd bits and pieces. But I like Georgian furniture, like George the First.
Do you have any...
The Chippendale era.
But you don't have any medieval, like... that must be difficult to come by because they will fall apart, right?
It is. It is difficult. I have a few bits of furniture built in 1500, which is like just after medieval, I suppose.
About 14 years ago, you launched a campaign to encourage people to declare heavy metal as their religion. What was that project about?
Well, it was, I think it was Metal Hammer, the magazine, that wanted to do that, just to get in the history books, you know, in the Guinness Book of Records. I think it was... they couldn't really find anybody to be the Archbishop, you know. So me stupidly put my hand up. Yeah, I'll do it. But I didn't have to do anything, you know. I didn't marry anybody, or we didn't have a church, you know. So I think they got it as a religion. But I think it was in that period where people were getting a bit bored and wanted something new, you know.
I guess heavy metal will create a sense of community, at least. Maybe there's not, like, a set of moral rules attached to it, but it's a community. So
it is. I mean, it's like there is a metal church, you know, so to speak. And it is a community of people, and people join it all the time. Young people come in, old people. So it's a regenerating, like a congregation of people around the world, but all particularly like the same genre, if not the same bands, but the same genre.
I think you kind of captured that in one of your most famous songs, Denim and Leather, from 1981, where you wrote about your fans. It's like a tribute to the fans. And you sing, or you ask them, did you read the music paper from the back to the front?
Yeah.
Did you find out where to see your favorite band? Did you listen to the radio every Friday night? Did you hang around your local record store?
Yeah. I mean, I wanted to, because of the, 1980 to 1981, 82 was like a fantastic period in Britain then, with the bands, with the music. It was a new style of music, new audience, you know, young kids, school kids got into it. And we had a lot of punk people who were like a little bit disenfranchised because the punk thing collapsed. So they came along. So it was a great period. And I wanted to write something in 1981 that sort of encapsulated that feeling. And I was looking for a title on Denim and Leather. Alice Cooper supplied me with the title from one of his songs.
Which Alice Cooper track?
I don't know what the track is, but it's on the album On the Inside.
Oh.
Can't remember what track it is. But it's only one little bit where he goes, like Denim and Leather, you slowly fade away. It's just stuck in my head. So when I was looking for a title, that was the title that came to me. So, I think it... That's one song in the 80s that encapsulates that feeling that shot across Europe in the 80s, in the early 80s. I think Denim and Leather is a perfect song for it.
And you actually got the fans to sing in the studio with you.
We did, with no internet.
Yes, how did you find them?
We did it by our fan club, basically. We sent out letters in envelopes and... asked them to come to a studio at a pre-arranged time, and that's what we did.
See my friends, see my friends, they cross the river. See my friends, see my friends, they cross the river.
I liked the Kinks. They're one of my favourite bands. I think lyrically is a fantastic lyricist, and it's a nice song that, because it blends the Eastern style and more poppy rock style. So I quite like that song, and I didn't want to do the obvious Kinks song, like You Really Got Me or Tired of Waiting, or you know. I wanted to do one of their more, you know, deeper cuts, and I like See My Friends. It's a fantastic song to sing.
It's got this like Eastern exotic feeling to the guitar. It almost sounds like a sitar.
Yeah, I think they probably heard the Beatles before, you know, doing yes. it, and then thought, yeah, let's do that because it's popular. You know, let's get a sitar in there and do this Eastern thing. But I like the Kinks. I mean, Kinks are a big part of my childhood, you know, my teenage years listening to the Kinks. And you know, they're a great band. I like them.
She's gone and now there's no one left to take her place. She's gone and now...
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The last Saxon album was called Carpe Diem, Seize the Day.
Yeah.
Is that a motto that you try to live by?
I think it should be. That and Never Surrender would be the Saxon motif on the coat of arms, you know. I was going to call the album The Pilgrimage, which would be a good title. We could have done the Pilgrimage World Tour. It was all there. But coming out of COVID, I thought maybe that's a little bit too darker. So I chose Carpe Diem, which is Seize the Day in Latin. So, yeah, I thought that was a better title coming out of COVID.
But you did write a track about COVID called Remember the Fallen.
I did.
Did you know a lot of people who maybe
passed away from the virus? Yeah, I did know people that died. Quite a few musicians went. I knew people that died with it. It's a very sad period. And I don't usually write very many songs about present-day things. I usually write them either about the past or maybe the future. So it's one of those songs where I was thinking, should I put it on the album? Should I not put it on the album? Everybody liked it. You know, it's quite a nice song. So, yeah, I put it on there. Yeah, Remember the Fallen.
But you ended up in the hospital right before the pandemic broke out.
Yeah, it was a crazy time, actually.
Yeah, what happened to you?
Well, I did my solo album, and we were rehearsing, and I had this strange feeling across my chest. It wasn't really a heart attack. It's more like indigestion, and kept getting it every now and again. So I went to the doctors, and they said, "Oh, you have angina." I'm like, "Really?" You know. So yeah. So they had a look and gave me a triple bypass. So yeah. So I was pretty lucky, really.
Wow. You know, imagine that if that had happened during COVID.
Yeah,
with the disease going around the hospitals.
Yeah, I was lucky. I was lucky, actually. I had it done before COVID. And then while I was, getting back, COVID came. So, if it had happened, 3-4 months later, I would have caught that crazy time in the hospitals when they were full of people. And nobody was getting any operations. It was crazy.
On your new album, Hellfire and Damnation, there are songs about the Salem witch trials, the battle at Hastings,
yeah,
and the French Revolution.
Yeah.
You've written many songs about events in history, you know, ranging from the Roman Empire and the medieval Crusades to the Kennedy assassination.
Yeah.
How did you become so interested in history?
I loved history when I was a small boy at school. I used to listen to the stories. We were taught about Magellan and going off and finding Christopher Columbus, and they're all fascinating stories, and it just, I just wanted to learn more, you know, and obviously later on, I was used that knowledge that I had to write songs. I think maybe, it might be a British thing, because Iron Maiden do the same sort of thing, but obviously not the same stories, but quite historic things, you know. Alexander the Great, Vlad the Vicarus, they're all they're all very historic-based songs. So it might be, maybe it's a British thing, singing about history. But I do love history, and this album, I've dipped into the historic pot quite a lot, yeah.
You mentioned Iron Maiden, and they have a song based on Coleridge's The Ancient Mariner, Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
And that's right.
You actually mentioned Kubla Khan on this record.
Yeah.
Which is a poem by Coleridge as well.
That's right. But I'm basing mine more on Marco Polo.
Yeah, you put him together with Shakespeare's The Merchant in Venice.
Well, The Merchant of Venice is Marco Polo.
Oh, okay, I get it.
He was The Merchant of Venice.
So.
It's not really the Shakespeare one. It's more an actual Merchant of Venice, which was the Marco Polo family. And he was
so it's a song about Marco Polo.
And Kublai Khan. He was the first guy to go to China, to met Kublai Khan. Kublai Khan sort of liked him. He became a big hotshot in Kublai Khan's court. And he wrote about gunpowder, which nobody had seen before, the silkworm, the ceramic pottery. I mean, you have to remember that China must have been like an alien civilization back then that was going on. You know, miles away from Venice or, you know, any of those places. So, yeah, it's a song about that, really. The Kublai Khan, who was the emperor of China, and Marco Polo, who went there, and they didn't kill him.
There's also a song called There's Something in Roswell, which seems to be about the Roswell incident in 1947.
Yeah.
When a military balloon crashed in New Mexico.
So they say.
Some people think or believe that it was a UFO that crashed.
Well, for everything UFO and alien, Roswell is ground zero. It's all started from Roswell, really. So from Roswell came out this huge UFO, you know, people seeing UFOs and alien abductions and all this. All that starts in Roswell. So I'm a huge fan of the conspiracy theory thing. And I really want Roswell to be a UFO crash. I think that would be really cool. But whether it was or not, I don't know. People have to make their own minds up. I'm saying there must be something in Roswell. You know, that's what I'm saying in the song. You know, for the first 3 days, it was like a UFO, a silver disc with like strange metal that you could bend and with like strange mathematical symbols. And then 3 days later, it was a weather balloon. And that's been the story ever since. So, you know, it's a bit like the grassy knoll, isn't it? You know, did Kennedy get shot by one man or three men? Or they're great, aren't they?
Oliver Stone's movie was so good that I actually, you know, believed it.
Believe it?
You know, it's so effective propaganda.
Yeah. I mean, I read a book
called... But you buy it.
Yeah, I read a book called Dallas 1 PM while I was in writing that album, and it convinced me that there was two shooters. So, and I still think there was two shooters. So the evidence is really strong. So, and Roswell, you know, there's photographs still around. The government tried to stop it and, you know, make sure that nobody saw it. But you can see it. If you go on Wikipedia or Google it, you can see the evidence there.
But why did people see so many UFOs back in the 70s and 80s? And
I don't know. Now
when everyone has a cell phone with a camera,
yeah,
you don't see any, you know, pictures of UFOs.
It's a bit like ghosts, isn't it? It's a bit like ghosts and spirits, you know. I mean, you know, I've seen some videos and pictures of ghosts. But, you know, are there any ghosts? You don't know, do you? You know, if you've seen one, you believe it, you know.
I once spoke to Lemmy about UFOs.
Yeah.
And he claimed that he had seen a UFO once back in 1966 when he was on tour with the Rocking Vickers.
Right.
And it looked like a pink light that flew by really fast.
Yeah, well, we saw one in San Diego. We were touring with, Rush. And we were in San Diego, and we saw this thing come across this mountain, whatever, really fast, stop dead, and then shot off the other direction. And we were convinced it was a UFO. But it might have been a 747 for all we know. But, you know, we just thought it was very unusual. We'd never seen anything like it before, and we were convinced it was a UFO. Oh! Over the years, me and Lemmy, you know, we had a lot of photographs together and we did a lot of interviews together. And Lemmy was a history buff as well. He could write some great battle songs, you know, 1914, it's a great song. And, you know, we had a big interest in history together. He liked the Second World War history. He was quite fascinated with all that.
He was big on collecting all the German stuff.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. Our very first tour we did, proper tour, you know, on a tour bus with hotels and food every day, was with Motörhead in 1979 on the Bomber Tour. And, you know, that's the tour where somebody wrote No Sleep Till Hammersmith on the back of the truck. I love Motörhead, and we had a great relationship, Motörhead, over the years in Saxon. We're very connected. You know, our fans felt very connected between both bands. So, yeah, I wanted to do a Motörhead song. Yeah, definitely.
In 1979, did they have that bomb plane on the stage then, or did that show up later?
Yeah, they did. They had the bomber.
They brought that with them, the bomber.
Yeah, they had the bomber.
And the light rig.
They did. They did. That was the first tour they had it. And they had it built for that tour. It was great. And, you know, we saw that and thought, You know, we could have something like that, which is why we had the eagle made. Which is the same thing, a big stage prop, you know.
How loud was it, Motorhead in 1979?
Loud. Loud. I loved it.
But you're hearing us okay after all these years.
Yeah. And so were Motorhead until Lemmy, you know, sadly passed on. But, yeah, I mean, they were... It was loud as band as you could ever hear Motorhead. And we sort of took up that war cry in the 80s, and we were loud as well. You know?
That was the whole, like, this one goes to 11 thing, right?
Yeah, everything goes to 11. Everything, the big Ian Gillan thing, everything louder than everything else, you know.
I've got some questions from my listeners, and not just any listeners, but the brave pop culture crusaders who support this podcast through Patreon. The first question is from Sebastian Elfors, and he writes, a friend of mine claims that he was at a bachelor party in Scotland around 1995, where Saxon were hired for £500 to play live. There were about 30 drunk guys in the audience. Is that story true?
I can't remember that. I have some good Scottish stories, though, but I can't remember that one. £500 would have been cheap.
That's kind of cheap.
I don't think we would have played in 1995 £500. Maybe £5,000, maybe, or £50,000. But no, that's probably made up. But a great story was, you know the game Grand Theft Auto?
Yes.
I don't know which edition it was. But one of the editions, I think, Iggy Pop is a DJ on the radio in the guy's car. And on there is Wheels of Steel. So we were touring at the time, and we got a phone call from, I can't remember what the company was that did Grand Theft Auto. Anyway, they hired us to play at their convention, their release party.
I think they're called Rockstar Games.
Right. And their base is in Edinburgh. And they paid us a lot of money to play there. And there was 1,500 people, all the people, the gaming people, young people that did all the programming. And they were drunk and, you know, we played our set. And they were like, you know, until we played Wheels of Steel, then the whole place went fucking crazy, you know, because the only new Saxon song they knew was Wheels of Steel. So it was really surreal, that moment.
And Wheels of Steel is about going really fast on the highway in a Chevrolet from 1968.
It is.
Is that a car that you owned or just dreamed about owning?
We did have an American car. It was an Oldsmobile we had, and we had a trailer. We used to put all the gear in the trailer, and we used to travel in the Oldsmobile, because you could fit six people in there. Actually, you could fit eight people in there quite comfortably. And so it was a cheap car, an old American limousine type thing. But yeah, it was based on that. We it had steel wheels, so, you know, I basically got the idea from that. We were on the highway and we didn't give any lifts, you know, we were like mean.
It's funny because you never get that, you know, true American highway feeling in Europe.
No,
you know, unless you're in Germany on the Autobahn, maybe then, but not in England. You know, because the roads are so tiny.
We were obviously very wacky having this big Oldsmobile town car, you know, and everybody else had minis and you know, little Ford, you know, Capris and things. So we were in this monster of a car with, like, you know, 10-litre engine, did about 7 miles to the gallon. But for us, it was a great way of moving our gear around, you know.
The next question is from Jörgen Krusell, who writes, Saxon was my first heavy metal experience. Do you remember how you came up with the idea for the Crusader album cover? That's one of the best there is.
Yeah.
That's a painting, right?
It is a painting. It's a guy called Paul Gregory. When we first met him, he was into doing, he's quite famous doing Lord of the Rings paintings. That's where his speciality comes from. The Tolkien books. That's most of his artwork's connected to that. And I sent him the words, and basically the song is written in a small boy's point of view, watching the guys go off to war and wanting to go with them. Could be the First World War, could be the Second World War, but, you know, young guys thinking that, you know, going on the crusade, going on the war is a great thing. And that's where the song came from. So he did this interpretation of the crusaders arriving, well, probably in the Holy Land, you know, and making their way to battle. So it is a great cover. I think the painting album
is really big, right?
It is. I've got it at home. It's like maybe 2 meters by a meter and a half. So it's quite a big piece of... And the new album has that sort of look to it, I think.
Yeah, where you have angels fighting demons.
We do, yeah. And it's a very striking image. And there's a piece of artwork by William Blake called Paradise Lost, which I really like that image, and that's the sort of thing I wanted. So, and the angel looks a little bit like the eagle's wings. So, I mean, you know, as soon as I saw it, I thought, yeah, we'll have that. I love that cover.
Is it true that the Crusader theme got you in some kind of trouble in the Middle East that you couldn't play in...
Yeah,
we were
booked to play Dubai, I think.
Dubai,
Rockfest, I think it was. And some journalist picked up on the lyrics, and he misquoted a lot of things on the lyrics. I mean, the song's a historic song. I mean, the Crusades did happen, and I'm sort of, you know, British, and I was writing about the Crusades. So I was writing it as a third person, you know. You know, Crusader, please take me with you. You know, I want to stand by your side. So that's where it comes from.
And finally, a question from Peter D. In the village Guldsmedshyttan, where I grew up, it was customary to go to the gym and work out shirtless, but dressed in blue jeans and Blundstone boots. There was only one CD at the gym, Saxon. I'd like to know how much weight Biff can bench press.
Not much these days, but back in the day, I mean, I've never really had a weightlifting physique, you know. I've just, you know, when in the 80s, when, you know, I was very, very, very thin, you know, skeletal figure, but, you know, I've never been into the, you know, the six pack and the, you know, the broad shoulders and with no neck. So I didn't sort of... I do training, I do weight, but not bench pressing, you know. I probably snap in half, you know, like, whoa. But I've got friends who do weight training, you know. It's you know, whatever. That's interesting. That's an interesting gym that only had one album, and it was a Saxon album.
I love that everyone who worked out wore their jeans as well.
Yeah, definitely. Or jeans or the spandex, yeah. You know, working out on the treadmills. Yeah, and I suppose depending on what album, you know, some songs would be fast, some would be slow. Deep Purple. You know, I was looking for a track because they influenced us massively and inspired us as well. I didn't want to do the obvious, you know, like obvious Deep Purple tracks. Speak King, it was one of my favourites. So, it's not an easy song to sing that either. Yeah, and Ian Gillan's a fantastic singer.
So but is it about drugs or going fast in a car, or both?
Songs are like that, aren't they? Whatever you perceive it to be. You know, but in the 80s, I used to have a load of Japanese girls that used to follow me, telling me they were the Princess of the Night, which actually the song's about a steam train. But, you know, whatever people's, you know, perception of the song, I'm good with that. But I always thought it was about a car.
you mentioned the steam train. There's another song called The Age of Steam on the Carpe Diem album where you sing about the Industrial Revolution. I'm interested in what you think about like the technological revolution that we're experiencing now with AI and everything.
Well, I think it's the same sort of thing. It's a march of progress, isn't it? You know, marching on, I think.
People are like nervous in the same way that, you know, back in the 19th century, a lot of people lost their jobs to machines.
They did.
And now with AI, the same thing is happening.
Yeah, same thing is happening. And I think that same thing will keep on happening. I think it's human nature to improve, you know, your intelligence and, you know, to invent. I think we're a race inventing. That's the thing that we do. So we're always looking for the new invention, the new way forward. I mean, when the industrial revolution, I mean, the farming industry was decimated because all those farm workers, you know, a machine could do a job of 100 people. So it was a big move, really.
We just talked a bit about Rockstar Games who produce Grand Theft Auto. I know that in the gaming industry, they're laying off a lot of people because a lot of people have been working with, you know, creating backgrounds for games and things, and you can do that through AI now, very easy, so.
Yeah, it must be bad, you know, for people who have made a life of doing that, you know, working on the games and the levels and the background, like you say, and the concepts, and now they can probably just put in some information, press a button, and it's done for you. It's a bit sad, really. But that's...
Have you listened to any AI-generated music?
No, I haven't really. I've seen the Beatles thing, listened to that, but which is not AI-generated music. They've used it to enhance the sounds. But I have been told that, you know, you can put in a subject and it writes lyrics for you. But I don't think I'm ever going to do that. I'm a human being, so I think I'll stay human.
Maybe we'll just look upon AI as a tool amongst others.
I hope so. That would be the way forward, just to use it to enhance your life, not to replace anything, you know, like somebody's voice.
One of your biggest songs is, of course, 747, Strangers in the Night, which is about this airplane incident in 1965.
Yeah.
When a plane going to JFK Airport couldn't land because of a power failure.
That's right.
New York was completely in the
completely
dark.
Completely blacked out, yeah.
There weren't any lights on the landing ground.
No.
So was that a big story in the papers?
Well, it was a story in the paper, but I saw a documentary about it not long after, sort of late 60s into the 70s, and it just stuck in my head that, you know, there was two stories going there. There was the story of the blackout and people meeting, falling in love in the blackout.
Yeah, a lot of kids were born
having babies
nine,
in the blackout.
9 months later, right?
Yeah. Particularly people that were stuck in lifts, which is a bit bizarre, but there you go. So there was two stories going on. There was one about the plane landing and there was one about people meeting in the power cut. So I put the two together, basically.
I read somewhere that the actual number of that Scandinavian Airlines flight was 9/11, not 101, as you sing in the song.
Yeah, I just thought that was artistic license.
But that's insane that the flight number was 9/11.
It is crazy. Yeah.
Of course, 101 sounds better if you sing it.
It does. 101 sounds better. And I don't even know if there was a Scandinavian Airlines that was landing, but it just sounded great.
Okay, so it wasn't Scandinavian Airlines. That's why I can't Google it.
I think it was. It was what they call bucket seats. The planes used to fly around and fill up as they went around, yeah? So, you know, flying from Hawaii to New York, and you know, it used to happen a lot in the sort of 70s, these bucket seat things.
There's another Swedish connection from that song. I'm not sure if you've heard about this Swedish rock group called Kent. They're not around anymore, but they were like a Swedish Radiohead. One of their early biggest hits was a song called 747 about a plane crash.
Right.
Which is, you know, lyrically very inspired by your song.
Right. Yeah, well, our song's a bit more positive. It didn't crash. But it went off and landed somewhere else. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know the song, but I'd like to hear it, definitely.
You know, I'll play it to you.
Yeah.
This is the track that they always used to end their concerts with, like the big final curtain call.
Okay.
The big, you know, like the last song of the evening.
Right.
It's very Radiohead-like.
Yeah, very Radiohead-like.
Your guitar player, Paul Quinn, who was in Saxon with you even back when you called yourself Son of a Bitch, he retired from touring this year.
He did.
And you decided to replace him with Brian Tatler from Diamond Head.
Yeah, which was a crazy thing to do, but I think people liked it. You know, I always had Brian in my mind.
Because a lot of your fans must have listened to Diamond Head as well.
Yeah. I mean, Diamond Head are all part of that early 80s movement. I mean, they got signed a bit late, 1982, so they missed the boat a little bit. But even so, you know, I mean, you know, Metallica brought them to the forefront by, you know, covering four of their songs. So, yeah, I mean, I think they were very well known in the 80s, Diamond Head, along with Saxon and Iron Maiden and Def Leppard. And, you know, I think two or three bands rose up out of that, you know, static down there, and Diamond Head really didn't have the management or the record company or the support at the time. They were a little bit late.
They became kind of like a connoisseur's band. People who know of Diamond Head are quite much into music.
Yeah, they're a cult band from the 80s, definitely. They have their own following, and people absolutely love them. And I think, you know, when people found out we'd got Brian, people were like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. You know, that's a surprise. But I always thought Brian could do great.
And he's a brilliant guitar player.
He is a brilliant guitar player. You know, we've replaced one legend with another legend, so which is great. Hold the Line. It's a weird choice, this. For Saxon to do this, but I must say we do a great version of it. Even Toto, the band, sent us an email saying we love your version. We're going to play that one from now on. Much rockier, much more in your face, not quite so soul-y. But yeah, back in the day, all that bow, 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 bow. The guitar riff, we love that guitar riff. And we use that style of playing in 747, actually. Da 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 da. They went ba bow, 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 bow. We went da 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 da. Very similar sort of style of playing, and it is big influence on us. So I wanted to put it. The rest of the band were like, no. I was like, yeah, it'll sound fantastic. Just play it heavy, play it like Saxon. I'll sing it a bit more rock and roll than they did, and let's see what happens. I think it sounds great.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach.
Give me great food.
Tacos.
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Without the piano, our version.
Didn't you have a keyboard player at some point, no?
No, we've never had a keyboard player.
Yeah, Iron Maiden used to have one, but they hid him. He was standing behind the curtain.
Oh, they had one of them, like Sabbath used to as well, but we never had one, no. We never had a keyboard player. I didn't know Maiden had one. They must have kept that well
hidden. Just for some tracks, I think.
Yeah, no, we never did that. We were pure guitar band. No, I never knew that, but I know a lot of bands did it. I mean, Sabbath had a keyboard player off stage, and they used to bring him on at the end of the night, like, hey, and people were, who's he? You know, say, hey.
But why couldn't he play on stage? It didn't look right.
There was a bit of a stigma, wasn't there, in the 80s, of we don't have a keyboard, you know, we're not...
Yeah, well, here in Sweden...
We're not a prog band.
You know, we had our own, version of the Mods versus the Rockers in England with the, the people who were into electronic music in Sweden and people into heavy metal. They were fighting in the streets.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I think Maiden probably didn't want to have that electronic music thing seen and hid it behind a curtain. But we never used the keyboard player, so we hid nothing.
And then Maiden fans were really confused by Can I Play With Madness with all those synthesizers.
I remember Maiden made quite a big deal of it that they didn't use keyboards at the time. But I don't think anybody really cared, to tell you the truth. I think it was just a manufactured fight, you know.
You're going on tour with Judas Priest and Uriah Heep in 2024. Is it still as fun to go on the road as it used to be?
Yeah, it's good going out with... We played with Priest a few times. We did America with them in 2018, just before COVID. So we're big pals, and you know, we love each other. We love our music, and Uriah Heep are legends from, you know, before Priest, really. So it's a good cross section of British metal, I think. It's good fun. It's good fun, and you know, they're big arenas, so it's quite good to do. You know, I think the fans will like it. It's not coming to Scandinavia, though, unfortunately.
It's interesting, though, how a lot of the bands from the new wave of British heavy metal are actually bigger now than they used to be in the 80s. If you look at Maiden, or if you look at Priest...
I think we are as well, especially in Europe.
Saxon as well.
Especially in Europe. UK, definitely in UK. We've done much bigger gigs... We're doing the same size gigs now in the UK as we did in the 80s, the Hammersmiths and the Brixtons. So, yeah, it's I think a lot of it, though, we've consistently had good albums for the last 10 or 15 years, you know, and we've sort of kept working and kept playing, and so have Judas Priest, and, you know, and so have Maiden. We've all had new albums coming out, so it keeps it fresh, and you bring in new fans, and, you know, it's... The whole you know, tribe gets bigger again, and those bands are still here, so it's great.
How long will you keep going?
As long as it takes, really.
takes to do what? What's the goal? Conquering the world.
No, it's just to reaching the perfect album, you know.
That's what you're striving for, the perfect album.
I think
album.
So. I mean, okay. I think this one might be pretty perfect. We might have already reached it. We might go downhill next time. But, yeah, I think writing songs keeps us going, you know, to write a great metal anthem, you know. I think Hellfire Damnation comes close to that. There's a lot of good songs on the album.
So you wouldn't feel like touring if you just played like old tracks?
No, we don't want to do that. No, we don't. We don't want to just go out and play 747 and Wheels Hill. Although we play that, but there has to be a new music element to make it exciting for us. You know what I mean? We're not our own tribute act. You know, I don't want to be that. I want to be writing new music and trying to entertain people.
Child of Satan, Lamb of God, the choice is yours to make.
All right, Biff here. Thanks for listening. Fantastic place here. We've had great fun. And keep the faith. And don't forget the new album, January the 19th. We'll see you all there.
Thank you, Biff, for coming here. It was a true pleasure to speak to you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Den podcasten producerades av Daniel Bäckström för Lejon Media. Biff Byford från Saxon var hemma hos Dragen.